Hello, and welcome to another episode of Exiting the Cave Short Reads. This week we begin Book 2 of The Consolation of Philosophy. When we last left Boethius and his physician, she had made her final diagnosis and administered the first of many palliatives. In this episode, the good doctor begins her treatment regimen by disabusing Boethius of his misconceptions about who and what fortune is. Let's listen in as philosophy lays out the case against Boethius' righteous indignation. Thereafter, for a while, she remained silent. And when she had restored my flagging attention by a moderate pause in her discourse, she thus began, "If I have thoroughly ascertained the character and causes of thy sickness, thou art pining with regretful longing for thy former fortune. It is the change, as thou deemest, of this fortune that hath so wrought upon thy mind. Well do I understand that siren's manifold wiles, the fatal charm of the friendship she pretends for her victims, so long as she is scheming to entrap them. How she unexpectedly abandons them and leaves them overwhelmed with insupportable grief. Bethink thee of her nature, character, and deserts, and thou wilt soon acknowledge that in her thou hast neither possessed nor hast thou lost aught of any worth. Methinks I need to spend much pains in bringing this to thy mind, since even when she was still with thee, even while she was caressing thee, thou usedst to assail her in many terms, to rebuke her with maxims drawn from my holy treasure house. But all sudden changes of circumstances bring inevitably a certain commotion of spirit. Thus it hath come to pass that thou also for a while hast been parted from thy mind's tranquillity. But it is time for thee to take and drain a draught, soft and pleasant to the taste, which, as it penetrates within, may prepare the way for stronger potions. Wherefore I call to my aid the sweet persuasiveness of rhetoric, who then only waketh in the right way when she forsakes not my instructions, and music, my handmaid, I bid to join with her singing, now in lighter, now in graver strain."
"What is it then, poor mortal, that hath cast thee into lamentation and mourning? Some strange unwonted sight, methinks, have thine eyes seen. Thou deemest fortune to have changed towards thee. Thou mistakest. Such ever were her ways, ever such her nature. Rather in her mutability hath she preserved towards thee her true constancy. Such was she when she loaded thee with caresses, when she deluded thee with the allurements of a false happiness. Thou hast found out how changeful is the face of the blind goddess. She who veils herself from others hath fully discovered to thee her whole character. If thou likest her, take her as she is, and do not complain. If thou abhorrest her perfidy, turn from her in disdain. Renounce her, for baneful are her delusions. The very thing which is now the cause of thy great grief ought to have brought thee tranquillity. Thou hast been forsaken by one whom no one can be sure that she will not forsake him. Or dost thou indeed set a value on happiness that is certain to depart? Again I ask, is fortune's presence dear to thee if she cannot be trusted to stay, and though she will bring sorrow when she is gone? Why, if she cannot be kept at pleasure, and if her flight overwhelms with calamity, what is this fleeting visitant but a token of coming trouble? Truly, it is not enough to look only on what lies before the eyes. Wisdom gauges the issues of things, and this same mutability, with its two aspects, makes the threats of fortune void of terror, and her caresses little to be desired.
Finally, thou oughtest to bear with whatever takes place within the boundaries of fortune's domain, when thou hast placed thy head beneath her yoke. But if thou wishest to impose a law of staying and departing on her whom thou hast of thine own accord chosen for thy mistress, art thou not acting wrongfully? Art thou not embittering by impatience a lot which thou canst not alter? Didst thou commit thy sails to the winds, thou wouldst voyage not whither thy intention was to go, but whither the winds drave thee. Didst thou entrust thy seed to the fields, thou wouldst set off the fruitful years against the barren. Thou hast resigned thyself to the sway of fortune. Thou must submit to thy mistress's caprices.
What? Art thou verily striving to stay the swing of the revolving wheel?
Oh, stupidest of mortals, if it takes to standing still, it ceases to be the wheel of fortune. Mad fortune sweeps along in wanton pride, uncertain as Europe's surging tide. Now tramples mighty kings beneath her feet, now sets the conquered in the victor's seat. She heedeth not the wail of hapless woe, but mocks the griefs that from her mischief flow. Such is her sport, so proveth she her power. And great the marvel when in one brief hour she shows her darling lifted high in bliss, then headlong plunged in misery's abyss. And so, we begin Book 2 with our first taste of serious philosophical argumentation. I'll have more to say about that in a moment. First, let's go over some of the lighter details. It's interesting to observe that the structure of Book 2 and 3 shifts subtly from Book 1. In Book 1, the structure is verse followed by prose. In Books 2 and 3, the structure is now prose followed by verse. I'm not sure why this shift occurs, and I've been unable to find anything in the literature to explain it. But if I had to take a stab at it, I would say that it is signaled in the text where philosophy tells Boethius that she is going to employ rhetoric and song to her purposes. They were leading Boethius in Book 1, now philosophy is leading them through Books 2 and 3. Next, note the references to fortune's ever-turning wheel. This is in part a foreshadowing of what's to come. In Book 3, we'll be diving deep into Plato's Timaeus, where we'll discover that fortune's wheel is but one cog in the great wheel of creation, driven from the center by the spindle of necessity, where the fates and the sirens hand out destinies to souls as they make their way to earth. This is Neoplatonic mysticism at its best. Everything is perfect circles rotating in harmony with one another, expressing the mind of God in all of its perfection. There'll be much more to say about this in the future, so stay tuned. Now, for those who have been waiting patiently for the hardcore philosophy, let's begin. Lady Philosophy models what any good philosopher would do. She rehearses Boethius's complaints back to him in a rough structure to demonstrate that she understands his positions. Then she rebuts them carefully, one by one. As an aside, I do find it hilarious that she tells him that his draft will be soft and sweet, but then proceeds to drub him with insults. In any case, let's go over the arguments together. I'll give each one a one-line slogan and then try to syllogize them as best I can and summarize philosophy's objections. Argument 1. Fortune is constant, not arbitrary. First, Boethius attributes his success in life to fortune's blessing. Second, he attributes his fall from grace to fortune's curse. Third, he interprets this categorical change in circumstances to the arbitrary whim of fortune, which he takes to be tantamount to injustice. Philosophy obviously objects to this. She says that fortune certainly plays by fixed rules, but they are rules that Boethius does not understand. They are constant and as predictable as the seasons, but they are written into the vast complexity of the wheel of creation itself, far beyond the reach of Boethius. Fortune and fate, in fact, are twin sisters. Thus, she insists, Boethius is wrong to claim Fortuna is capricious or unjust. This is actually an allusion to Aristotle's concept of chance from the Metaphysics, where chance is merely the coincidence of causal necessity and a mismatched expectation, something like digging a furrow to plant potatoes and in the process discovering a buried treasure in the ground. Argument 2. Stoic resignation is the only proper way to regard the vagaries of fortune. This particular argument is an argument for a kind of psychological stance. It's not a metaphysical or an ethical one, but it will be couched in ethical terms because in medieval philosophy they didn't really have the concept of a psychology as such. In any case, first, Boethius thinks fortune granted him gifts because they were owed to him on account of his life as a chaste and virtuous philosopher. Second, he thinks that, from our first argument before, fortune has unjustly revoked these gifts. And third, he therefore takes the misattributed maltreatment from the above to be a just cause for his own anger and woe. Philosophy objects by defending fortune, insisting that fortune owes nothing to any man, regardless of his quality. The gifts she lures men with are hers to dispose at her pleasure, and men who seek her company must concede that ownership. What's more, the gifts she has to offer are, in fact, no true path to happiness. Therefore, not only is there no cause for grief, in fact, the wise man should feel great relief at her parting because she has removed an impediment to true happiness. And this is something we'll come back to later because it becomes a major theme very soon in upcoming chapters. So, again, stay tuned. Argument 3. Humility saves the unfortunate. First, Boethius wishes to impose a rule upon fortune, ignorant of the rules already binding the two of them together. Second, he was the one who chose to lash himself to the wheel in the first place, thus taking on fortune's rules in his ignorance and obligating himself to those rules. Third, he now seeks to escape the consequences of his choices by demanding that the universe within which fortune operates change just for him. Philosophy concludes by objecting that the greatest injustice man can commit is to place himself above the order of the cosmos as the judge of its governors and ultimately the judge of its master. Boethius has done so, according to philosophy, by way of his lament, demanding that heaven suspend the unfolding of providence in order to spare him his fate. He is therefore, according to philosophy, the unjust one in this picture. Only by fully embracing responsibility for his role in lashing himself to the wheel can he find inner peace and perhaps redemption. And with that, we conclude today's episode. Stay tuned for next week, when philosophy dons the guise of fortune herself and reiterates her dominion over the gifts of fate.